Good morning, everyone. We will be having the Board of Regents Audit, Compliance, and Title IX Committee meeting, and we will begin now at 10:44. If I could have the roll call.
Chair Brager?
Here.
Vice Chair Del Carlo?
Here.
Regent Bautista? Regent Bautista?
Present.
Regent Boylan?
Sorry about that. I'm here. Thank you.
And Regent Gokachia?
I'm here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. We are going to go into public comment, and I will read out the number for those that might be on the line and would like to offer public comment. That number is 669-444-9171, and enter the following meeting ID, 992-8475-3091, and the passcode is 555-555. Is there any public comment in GBC?
There is no public comment at this time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there public comment at the system office in Reno?
There's no public comment in Reno.
Thank you. Is there any public comment here in Las Vegas? Seeing none, is there any public comment on the phone?
None at this time, Ms. Chair.
Thank you very much. We will move on to possible action. We have the minutes that we'll consider for November 20th, 2025. Is there a motion or any changes, comments that need to be heard first?
I make a motion to approve, ma'am.
Motion from Regent Boylan.
Second
from Regent Bautista. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Carol, Regent DiCarlo. I will make sure that you have that couple second lead time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Follow-up change in leadership, GBC. The committee may approve acceptance of the following follow-up responses to the audit report of the GBC change in leadership for the period of July 1, 2022 through June 30th, 2024. Are there any questions or comments? We do an audit when there is a change in leadership to make sure that all viable payments or items are taken care of. A motion to that if there's not any comments or questions.
I'll make the motion to approve.
Thank you. We have a motion by Regent Bautista.
Second from Regent Gokachia.
Thank you. We have a motion from Regent Gokachia. And all those in favor signify by aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
And I apologize, I didn't say that on the last item. Do I need to go back or anything, or I'm good?
Chair Berg, I believe that the record intent is clear.
That's addressed. Thank you very much. 2C, and you know what? I don't know what I'm actually, I know what I'm doing. I could have taken all those at one time. Forgive me, I was just moving along here, but it's pretty quick. 2C, follow-up special course and differential program fees, UNLV. The committee may approve acceptance of the follow-up responses to the audit report of the UNLV special course and differential program fees for July 1, 2023 through March 31st, 2025. We did discuss this pretty thoroughly. Any comments or questions? If not, a motion for however. Anybody have a motion?
I'll move. This is Regent Del Carlo. Okay.
I have a motion for approval from Regent Del Carlo. A second, please.
A second? I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Second from Regent Boylan.
Yes, ma'am.
All those in favor signify by aye.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none, we'll move forward. And I apologize. I know to do that in consent. I just started reading. Number three is School of Dental Medicine. Chief Interim Auditor Lauren Triple will present for approval the report and institutional response to the UNLV School of Dental Medicine audit for the period of July 1, 24 through May 31, 25. We can discuss that audit findings and recommendation may recommend specific action of the Board of Regents and or the Chancellor to address the findings and the recommendations. Ms. Tripp.
Thank you, Chair Brager. Lauren Tripp, Chief Internal Auditor. In the audit summary document, there's a table which lists the audits being presented today. That included the follow-up audits that were just approved. I just want to say thank you to all the institutions who have departments with the audits on the agenda today. I fully understand nobody enjoys being audited, so I just wanted to say thank you. Moving into the first audit report, the UNLV School of Dental Medicine, I wanted to emphasize a few items before highlighting the recommendations we have for this audit, because I feel like it's worth noting. So in the past, there's been audits where we've started, we've gone in, looked at controls operations, and we determined that the unit we're auditing could benefit from us initially identifying areas for improvement and then coming back at a later time to reassess those areas. It's a collaborative effort, and we have done this in the past, and it's proven to be pretty positive. So this is what we did for this audit. After initially identifying areas for improvement, we returned approximately 9 months later to follow up on the areas that we initially assessed to see if there were any advances made in the areas we had initially identified. This allowed the School of Dental Medicine time to develop and implement a strategy to address our initial concerns raised. So this report reflects the areas that we identified as still needing further improvement surrounding certain processes. So with that background in mind, we have some recommendations for strengthening controls surrounding accounts receivable. So this includes periodic reviews of patient accounts and a better process to ensure individuals are aware of their balances, following up on those balances, along with identifying inactive balances. During the insurance claim process, ensuring denied claims, this could be anything from maybe x-rays weren't attached initially, making sure these are followed up on in a timely manner so they aren't denied because of a lapse of time. We also identified opportunities for cost savings in transitioning from virtual credit cards to EFT payments, because then with the virtual credit cards, there's a fee incurred, so cost savings there. Improving cash handling processes and recommending timely transfers of gift funds from the foundation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions in regards to item number 3? Seeing none, I do have a quick question. When you spoke about the billing, how long ago, and I know audits take time, so from the time the audit was taken till now is approximately how much time?
Lauren Tripp, Chief Internal Auditor. So I was looking at this yesterday, so we ran the balance March 2024, and then we re-reviewed it. I believe it was...
I know it went to May 31st, but yeah. I just wanted to know, you know.
I think it was May...
I just wanted to make sure it was as close to that. I just have one quick question, and that would be from May 31st to now, February. Do we see that the billing department in particular, and we've had honest discussions about that, and anyone can answer that you would like, sir. Do we feel that that is getting under control? Because in the audit, I'm going to bring up a few more questions.
Chris Evey, UNLV Interim President. For the record, I want to just start by thanking Lauren Tripp, the Chief Internal Auditor, for her assistance in identifying the material weaknesses that we agreed with all of her findings. And so I think the answer to your question is yes, we see progress. We've been working very hard to add capacity in the leadership and accounting and billing space. And if you want the specifics of what's being done on that, I would defer to the current acting dean, Dr. Sean Gerstenberger.
No, I'm good with that right now. Probably in about a month, I might ask for a meeting to see where we've come and where we're going. And I appreciate your answer. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, this is for possible action in regards to the findings and fundings during that time period, July 1, 24, May 31st, 25. Is there a motion on the floor?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Thank you. We have a motion from Regent Batista. Do we have a second?
Second, Regent Del Carlo.
We have a second from Regent Del Carlo. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? I'm sorry. I promised to give you time, and then I move forward. All those, anyone that opposes? Seeing none, we will move on. And thank you so much to Auditor Tripp. I appreciate the information and the diligence that your team does. Number four, Uniform Guidance Audit Report. And this is from Edie Bailey, LLP. We have Kurt Slicker. And it's not a hard name. One of the partners, he'll present for approval the results of the Nevada System of Higher Education single audit. So this is specific, which he will share, but it is specific too, and how important. They're all important. And I want to just say this before we start. Audits aren't here to say gotcha. Audits are so we can do a better job and know where we need to identify little glitches in our system. We're human beings. We all balance our checkbooks. I'm certain if anybody, mine's pretty perfect, but as anybody else's is not, then I want you, I like numbers. I would like you to know that this is how we have to perceive and what we do. There are quite a few, which is not good, but only a few that are a little bit more major than they should be. And I believe that there's always room for improvement. And I just want to say I appreciate all of our different audit people. There's hundreds and thousands of numbers to this, and I do think we can get better. So I just want to say that before you start. I did take three pages of notes just to get it in my brain of what our meeting was like. So I'm going to turn this over to you, and then we'll go to questions after that.
Perfect.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Kurt Schlicker with Ide Bailey for the record. I'll spend the next little time trying to provide an overview of the results for the audit with respect to compliance with federal programs for the year ended June 30, 2025. Also known as the single audit or uniform guidance audit. So to kind of put and frame what we're talking about here today, the focus is on compliance with direct and material compliance requirements for the programs that were selected for testing. What does that mean to somebody who doesn't live and breathe this stuff like I do? We look at the requirements under federal regulations. We look at how they apply to the grant program that is being run by the system, and then we use a quantitative and qualitative assessment of what we think is significant to the user to be able to conclude on whether the system materially complied with the grant. Okay, so we try to look at the important stuff, said another way. The major programs that are selected for audit every year are a mix of definitions and procedures that we have to follow as prescribed by the federal government and some judgment on behalf of the auditor. So for large programs, those programs rotate in every 3 years, and then they stay in the audit cycle until essentially they have a clean audit. So they rotate in. If they have a material weakness or a material noncompliance, they're audited again in following years. If they're relatively clean, they get to go into a three-year cycle and rotate out. And then there's medium-level programs. We call them Type B. Those are based on auditor's judgment, where we like to rotate in some of the medium programs to get some, you know, bigger scope to the audit and some purview to maybe not just the big programs. So that's how major programs are selected. What did we look at this year? We had 11 major programs this year. That is a lot for the system. There's been years where the system has four or five major programs, so we had 11 this year. Some of that is a result of that formula calculation and big programs rotating in. Some is a result of prior year results, and then some of those are a result of our judgment. So you can see up there, we audited the Student Financial Assistance Cluster, Research and Development. Those two are by far the largest for the system. We also audited the Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Funds, the COVID funds under the American Rescue Plan Act, Gaining Early Awareness and Readiness for Undergraduate Programs, commonly known as GEAR Up, the Mental Health Block Grant, the Career and Technical Education, Adult Education, Economic Development Cluster, a substance abuse program, epidemiology, and a BLM fuels management program. So those are the 11 programs. You can see the chart up there when we previously audited them. Ones that have a 2024 for previous audit, they were selected again this year because they had findings in the prior year, and so they were not able to be rotated out. Programs that you see up there with 2022, they rotated in because of the three-year cycle. And then the ones that are undetermined, those were ones we selected based on our judgment. Okay, so that kind of maybe highlights in that table how they were selected. Here's another way to show kind of a trend. So in 2023, the system had six major programs. $506 million were audited in total expenditures, 69.4%. 2024, 10 major programs, almost 85% coverage. And then this year, again, 11 major programs, almost 86% of the system's CIFA was audited. Now, I do want to be clear on that. That does not mean we look at every transaction for that 86%. It means we sample transactions from that 86%, if that makes sense. With respect to results, because that's really what people want to know, is what were the results of the audit? I need to be clear and explain the different severities of findings that we report, because there are different severities. Some are more severe than others. The most severe finding that we report in a single audit is material noncompliance. What that's saying is, in our judgment, we looked at the rules and regulations, the terms and conditions of the grant, and in our judgment, the system did not materially comply with whatever that requirement was. That results in a qualified opinion. So that's as severe as we get, basically a qualified opinion. We can get to adverse too. We have no adverse opinions, so it's a qualified opinion. Material weakness is a deficiency in internal controls that we think could lead to material noncompliance, but did not in this instance lead to material noncompliance. So it's a breakdown in controls, but in our judgment, it didn't lead to material noncompliance. And then a significant deficiency is a breakdown in internal controls, but less severe than a material weakness, meaning, okay, it's still some control issues we need to true up, but they weren't so severe that they would theoretically lead to a material noncompliance. So that's kind of how we report the three different severities of the findings. So again, and I know this is a big chart to try to interpret, but it was a little bit easier to put it into a chart than go through every finding. Up here is the results. We did have 27 findings that we reported in the single audit this year. The breakdown by program is up there. We do have three qualified opinions. So that's three material noncompliance, and I'll go into more detail on them in a couple of slides. One over the research and development cluster, one over gear up, and then one over economic development. It should be noted, if anybody's doing the math and counting everything up there, if it's a material noncompliance, it's automatically a material weakness. So I didn't count wrong. It's just they get doubled in that column. As far as repeat findings go, and please let me explain repeat findings for a moment. We report repeat findings only on the programs that were audited last year and audited again this year. So if it's a similar finding but for a different federal program that wasn't audited in the prior year, it's not a repeat finding from our reporting position. Also on repeat findings, we usually communicate findings to the institutions during our audit in the fall or early winter. Usually that's, 4 to 6 months ongoing into the next fiscal year. So it usually takes 2 years to clear findings, because if they were doing something wrong and we reported in the audit, they were likely doing it wrong for 4 to 6 months in the new year. So it ends up usually taking a 2-year cycle to clear the repeat findings. But nonetheless, I did show the numbers up there for what findings were reported as a repeat finding again in the current year. As far as a comparison to the prior year, as I mentioned, 27 findings this year versus 17 last year, three qualified opinions versus two last year, 7 versus 6 in the material weakness, and then a pretty big increase in the significant deficiencies. Part of that's due to the number of major programs. We audited an extra program this year than last year. So I did the math, 2.4 findings this year per program versus 1.7 findings per program last year. Again, it is more findings. I think we acknowledge that. As far as which compliance requirements they're in, the federal government organizes requirements with federal awards into different areas. So we look at allowable costs, what can be charged to a grant. Cash management is how you bill the federal agency or the grantor for reimbursement under grants. Eligibility for who can participate in a program. Matching level of effort and earmarking is another way of saying cost share. So what cost share does the system have to meet that federal award? Period of performance is the timeline that costs can be incurred. Reporting is what exactly it sounds like. It's the reports, the financial and non-financial information that you report under a grant. Subrecipient monitoring is the procedures performed when you receive a grant and you pass it through to another entity. So you give it to another entity. You've got oversight responsibilities there, and that's what subrecipient monitoring is. And then special tests is potpourri that the grant decides. The majority of the findings are centered around reporting, allowable costs, and subrecipient monitoring. Those would be the three areas where we saw the heaviest influence of errors. I did mention three qualified opinions, so I'll go over those relatively quick to provide some context. The first is over research and development and subrecipient monitoring. Again, as I mentioned, subrecipient monitoring revolves around oversight of other entities that you pass grant funds to. This is a very significant compliance area for the federal government and the Office of Inspector General. The majority of the Office of Inspector General reports that we read and that are published on their websites, almost all of them are finding errors in subrecipient monitoring. They're clawing back funds, they're questioning costs, they're deeming improper payments. It's a very heavy focus area from the Office of Inspector General. It's a heavy focus area for us. We take it very seriously because there's such a spotlight on it. So we had this finding throughout the system. The details are in the actual finding, but essentially every school that we tested subrecipient monitoring at, we had recommendations to improve their subrecipient monitoring policies and activities. From implementing risk-based policies to reviewing expenditures or getting some assurance on costs to required communications, risk assessment, and monitoring audit results. They vary depending on the institution. Finding number 10 was over the economic development cluster. This relates to cost share. So what I mean by cost share is when you receive a grant, let's just say $100, and they say for every $100 you spend of federal money, you have to spend $30 of your own money. Okay, that's what cost share is. For costs to be claimed as cost share, they have to be treated and allowable just like a federal cost were. So if you were going to say we can reimburse this from the grant, but we're not going to and we're going to use it as cost share, they have to follow the same rules. So when we did that testing in general, this was at UNLV, the time and effort reporting wasn't being maintained for the cost share expenses. So for cost share to be eligible, they have to keep time and effort reporting to then demonstrate the time and effort spent on the grant that the grant wasn't paying for, but that UNLV was paying for. Okay, and then there was one other item on there for some facility charges that adequate documentation was not maintained to determine the amount being used. Finding 19 is over gear up. This is performance reporting, and this is throughout the system. This was at every report we tested. We do take a cross-section of sample across the system who has the program. Essentially, every performance report we tested had errors. And because we had errors on every performance report, that's what necessitated the qualified opinion. Now, There's a difference between a performance report or a progress report and a financial report. This is non-financial information, so it's caseload demographics usually, or participants. It's different demographics that are reported to the federal agency. If the federal agency requires that report to be submitted, we test it. We're not going to make a judgment on whether we think the report is important or not. It's a required report. We test the accuracy of that required report. So again, we looked at, I believe, 9 reports in this case, and all 9 had errors on them across the system. So that's what led to the qualified opinion here. A couple of additional items. There are some findings with question costs. Now, what a question cost is we come in as part of the audit, we look at expenditures that were charged to the grant, and we don't think they're allowable. But that's not the end result. A question cost goes to the grantor. The grantor evaluates the documentation and the circumstances surrounding it. The institutions have the opportunity to discuss that with the grantor, and then there will be a decision made between the institutions and the grantor. And if the grantor essentially agrees with us, the auditor, they'll deem them an improper payment. And then once they're deemed an improper payment, usually there's a remedy where they're either clawed back or offset against future grants or draws. So these are what, in layman's terms, I would say, funds found during our audit that are at risk of being lost, if that's an easier way of putting it. We're only required to report question costs if the known amount is greater than $25,000 or if the error projects to greater than $25,000. So we have 4 findings where we reported an amount for question costs. The ones that are below $25,000 are because they projected to greater than $25,000, so we're required to report them. For finding number 2, there was a payment that we deemed to not have adequate support. And so because we deemed that there was not adequate support maintained, we questioned those costs for a little over $3,500. For finding number 6, there were some awards made under Pell where students had graduated in the fall and then re-enrolled as a graduate student for the spring semester, and their Pell eligibility was not changed to ineligible because they were now a grad student and they still received the Pell Award. So those were ineligible for Pell. Finding number 10, that does relate, and back to the earlier matter, inadequate support for cost share, really time and effort reporting, and an in-kind facility charge. And then number 26, almost $64,000, I believe that was also time and effort reporting, because for payroll to be charged to a grant, you have to know the actual time spent on the grant. And so if you don't keep the time records, it's hard to support how much payroll to charge the grant. So some overall final comments before I take questions, and I'm of course happy to take any and all questions that you have for me. I do want to say that even though there's a lot of findings up here, management and the staff were professional throughout the audit. We have a working relationship. We go back and forth. We discuss matters. Certainly, findings get difficult to discuss because nobody wants a finding, but management and staff throughout were professional and cooperative. No concerns there. We look forward to continuing to serve the system. You guys really are a great client, and we really do enjoy working with you. I already talked about the repeat nature of findings. So again, I do want to reiterate that major programs change from year to year, and repeat findings do take a year to 2 usually to remedy. I do also want to do a special thank you to the Chief Internal Auditor. She facilitates a lot during the audit, and she also assists us in some of our testing with respect to the student financial aid cluster. So her assistance is greatly appreciated throughout the entire audit, and really the management team of NCHI in general. So again, thank you very much for allowing me the time, and happy to answer any questions.
Before I go to that, thank you so much. When I met with you, it was extremely informative, and you've shared the same information. I just have a tiny bit more detail on my notes. To our financial officer, Lauren Tripp, has always answered anything that I needed. She offers any time that actually to any board member, but having that relationship has made a big difference in how we move forward through a lot of these situations. So not one school was not affected, which, like you said, nothing that would not keep the school running financially, fiscally, with integrity, but it's things that have to be corrected, and I think that's very important. I'm happy, before I make a couple comments, having had the ability to speak with the auditor, to open it up to the regents that are on the committee.
Yes, ma'am.
Regent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation, and I'll say the same about I forget your title always.
Chief
Internal Auditor Tripp. Two real quick questions, Chair. One was, can the cost share be taken from the grant? As far as I know from dealing with grants, you cannot take the cost share and say, when the federal government gives you a grant, you cannot say, okay, I'm taking out this $30,000 from it.
Thank you, Regent Boylan, Kurt Schlicker, Ide Bailey for the record. Ultimate disposition is up to the grantor, but what they can do is reduce your funding by the proportional percentage of the unallowed cost share. So let's say if you had a cost share requirement of 100 and the allowable costs you came up with were 70, they could then take that proportion against your grant and disallow or affect your future funding by that proportional difference as well, depending on the nature of the award. But that's up to the grantor. That's not my decision. I'm just reporting it to the grantor, right, and they get to decide.
Right, right. Thank you. The second question, you mentioned something, and I don't know if you can answer that or Madam Trippier can answer it, but when you talked about the Pell Awards, when someone's an undergrad and they go become a graduate student and they received the Pell Award with they shouldn't be receiving, so maybe I should ask, do we get the money back from those students? Do we go after them? Or, oh, well, they got the grant, but, you know, let them go.
I think that, Kurt Schlicker, Ide Bailey for the record, Regent, I think that would be the procedure on that would be a question better directed to Student Financial Aid of UNR on their procedures for that.
And if they're not here now, we can have them send a report or a document to us, if that would be okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Whoever's affected through that.
You said UNR.
No, I wasn't looking at you. It looked like it. No, it would be UNR. I was not going to try to call anybody out, but.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
I don't know, and I don't like doing this, but if UNR wants to speak, great. If not, you'd like to get something back to the board, that would be more than appropriate. Okay, I will go to Regent Darcollo. Did you have anything? Okay, and Regent Batista. Did you have anything? Okay, I'm just going to say a couple things. Obviously, overall, it's a gigantic, and I'm going to use that term, system. It's just that we don't want to keep having more audit items. We want to have less. A couple of things, and I'm not going to I'm just going to leave it globally. The principal investigators, I really feel like from what I went in depth and looked at and read, need to, maybe they're going to be overburdened, I don't know. And if they are, they need to go to their chairperson, their president, and share that they need more help. I think that people can work smarter and harder. And so I'm hoping that on the next audit, and I'd love to be chair one more time, but I'd love to see that those are fixed. And that's across the board. It was very rare that it was just one school. There were a number of things that were across the board. The gear up readiness was across the board. We need to have that fixed. The research and development was pretty much, it was really not our CSNs. It was everyone else. Other than that, I feel like that it was not particularly, I don't like good or bad. What does that mean? We're looking at a portion. I think that it being the federal aspect of it was not good. I think that overall that our people work extremely hard, and I'm certain they don't like audit findings to come up. And like I said in the very beginning, it's not I got you. It's about knowing how we can work better. We all have hopefully checking accounts or spreadsheets, and I'm certain through the years we've found something that we could do better or have a better system. I like the system I use now for my, and I have work, home, rentals. I mean, I have a huge spreadsheet of what I have to do. So a little bit I do judge things. Working in a position where I only make money if I have a commission. So people that get paid, whether they're good or bad, I have a problem with that. So I just feel like they need to work harder and smarter, and that next time this gets a lot better. Otherwise, I think there would have to be, through the chancellor, some serious discussions, because it was too many findings. Even though nothing was like, there's no extremely negative, it's just not necessary. So I'm not in meaning to call out the principal investigators. If you're out there hearing and if you need help, go to whoever your superior is and share what's going on, that you need help so that those items can be much better. The cash in and cash out, I think those need to be better. I think anywhere we're getting a grant or Pell money, that we really have to be exceptionally cautious as to what we do. I don't want to belabor it, but I do think that auditors work hard, and I'm not going to dismiss it and sit quietly. But I do think what's being said is not a negative. I think it's a reality. And over the big giant system, three material weaknesses can be corrected. They will stay on the system through next year, or for how long. Hopefully it'll disappear after next year. But kudos to everyone. The four things that we spoke about, economic, gear up, research and development, and the principal investigators, I think you have an opportunity between now and next time to have that be much better. And I hope that would happen. Whoever's over whoever, I do think if it's not, then I do think the chancellor needs to be looking at who's not doing what they should. So I appreciate this information on the audit. We'll move on to, unless anybody has any specific question or comment, I would like to go. I apologize to those that are not on the audit committee. Anything from anyone not on the audit committee? Okay, thank you very much. We're going to go to, and again, thank you so much, and I loved our conversation. Direct, I think that you're equitable. I think that you do what you have to do for the position that we have hired you for. So thank you very much. Number five.
Chair Brager, just a reminder that number four is for possible action.
Oh, thank you so much. I just keep on going on a roll, so you have to catch me. Okay, so we would have a motion for the approval of the results of the NETA System of Higher Education Single Audit Uniform Guidance for the year ending June 30th, 2025, and they all know what they need to improve. Motion?
So moved.
Motion from Regent Boylan?
Yes, ma'am.
Second from Regent Batista. All those in favor signify by aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
All those in opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes. Thank you. I normally don't get on such a quick roll. Item number five is the NSHE Human Resources staff will offer general remarks on the Title IX regulations. I would be happy to call Chief Human Resource Officer Ruben. And hopefully you're not just leaving the room and you're coming up here. Or no, is that not? Oh, there you are.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. The remarks will actually be conducted by Sherry Olson.
Thank you, Yanata, and good morning, Chair Brager and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sherry Olson. I am in a letter of appointment conducting special projects for the System Administration Human Resources Office. And with me today, I have Yanata, as well as several of our institutional Title IX officers. I'm here today to provide a brief update regarding the work of the Title IX Working Group. And so that update is that the Title IX Working Group has been meeting weekly over the past several months to review current policies and ensure alignment with recent updates and compliance requirements, At a future board meeting, we will be preparing and presenting proposed revisions to the NSHE policies for your consideration. The proposed revisions are anticipated to include adding the definition of power-based violence to the handbook, which the board previously approved in concept. We will also be updating some legal definitions according to recent federal changes, and that is my update. We look forward to presenting those items to you in a future board meeting, and we are here to respond to any questions you may have today.
Thank you very much. This is information only. Does anyone have any questions on the committee? Seeing none, any questions from the full board? Regent Goodman.
Thank you. I heard that there was, and if you can't answer this, I'll talk to you offline, but I heard that there was some discrepancy with all of what took place up at UNR with the volleyball team. I heard that there was a Title IX officer invited, and then I heard that there wasn't. Do you have information on that? Or can you divulge that? Or I'm just not sure, but I thought I'd ask.
Thank you, Regent Goodman. Today we do have representation from UNR. Ms. Edmondson, do you mind responding to that question?
Hi, good afternoon. This is Viva Edmondson, and I am the Title IX coordinator for University of Nevada at Reno. Can you all hear me? Because I'm coming in remotely.
Yes, we can.
Okay. So you asked if there was a Title IX representation at the volleyball team meeting. Am I correct?
Yes, thank you.
There was not.
Okay, great. Was it requested, did you know, or?
It was not requested, and nor do I believe it was even really required.
Okay.
But it was not requested.
And could you elaborate on the fact that it was not required?
It's not something that would be required by, you know, federal law for us to be there or have representation there. That's the reason for that answer, but we were not requested or asked to attend.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate you clarifying that. I think there was some uncertainty around that issue, so thank you for putting it on the record.
You're welcome. There I am on video for you at the end. Anything else, I'll be glad to answer.
Thanks, Eva.
Okay, thank you so much. I think we're good there. Thank you, Regent Goodman. Anyone else at this time? Seeing none, we will go on to another informational item, item number 6, code revision, internal audit department documentation. Chief Internal Audit Lauren Tripp will present a revision of the code Title II, Chapter 9, Section 9.2 to provide clarification and documentation within the department and confidentiality of department documentation. The proposed revision is presented for information only, brought back to a future board meeting. To you.
Thank you, Chair Brager. Lauren Tripp, Chief Internal Auditor. So this is the first reading as an information-only item to revise the Regents Code related to providing clarification on documentation within the department and confidentiality of that documentation. I believe this section was last revised in 2014. As our department has evolved and we've taken on different internal audit responsibilities, services, it made sense to provide additional clarification and give examples on what are working papers. So this is really more of a housekeeping item to provide more specific examples, spelling it out instead of what's just implied with what working papers means. Additionally, because we follow the IA global standards, we ethically have a duty in our capacity to protect documents that are considered confidential that we receive while providing internal audit services. As you can imagine, we get a lot of sensitive information when we're performing these audits. So it's our duty to treat those files with care. We aren't the owners of those files. We have to protect those files. So this additional added language helps us to better align with our responsibilities per the standards. So this is really my long way of saying that the updates are to better state what was always the intent. It's just now it's more clear. So it's presented for information to you all today, and we're open to any input before we bring it back to a future meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there, even though it's information only, any comments or questions on item number 6? Okay, seeing none from anyone, We will go on to item number 7 for possible action, Internal Audit Department Work Plan and Status Report for ENSHE. Chief Internal Auditor Lauren Tripp will present for approval the Internal Audit Work Plan for the 6-month period ending June 30th, 2026, and the Internal Audit Department Status Report for the 6-month period ended December 31st, 2025. Ms. Tripp.
Thank you, Chair Berger. Lauren Tripp, Chief Internal Auditor. So for this item, we've shifted from presenting this audit work plan from an annual basis to biannually. This allows more flexibility since priorities can change quite rapidly. It allows us to be more agile and flexible. It also allows the committee to see what we're currently working on, what we plan to work on, and what we have worked on. I feel like the question I get asked the most is, how do audits end up on the work plan? How do you determine that? So on pages 3 and 4, that describes a bit how the plan's put together, and I'll just kind of go over those real quickly. So the first thing is we have a risk assessment. It's this matrix with some calculations. It includes the audit universe. So all the possible areas we could audit, and they're all ranked by, there's different risks such as financial risks. The ones with high revenues, expenses will rise to the top or have a higher rating. There's a weighted average involved, and that's really high level what that one is about. It's risk-based, so there are quite a few that we haven't done for many years. We also solicit input from business officers. We've gotten some really great audits out of asking them. We never want to feel like we're wasting anybody's time. Like, why did they do that audit? They should have done this audit over here. There are also some audits per policy that we must perform, such as host audits. So every time this is presented, you'll see there's at least one host audit on our schedule. Another one that we do is change in leaderships for president and above. We also take in consideration hotline submissions coming in. So is there an area that keeps getting a lot of submissions? Is it even something we can audit? As you know, I've presented on the hotline in the past, and sometimes usually the highest category is personnel. So can we really even audit it? Is it more personnel related? We also keep our ears open for other concerns. So this could include requests during meetings, or we're part of this group called ACUA, the Association of College and University Auditors. They have a pretty active forum where people might be like, hey, we're running into this issue. Anybody ever done an audit like this? So we keep reviewing that as well. So as you can tell, there's quite a variety of different areas we consider when determining our work plan. There's often important unforeseen projects that come up as well throughout the year that we need to provide resources in a timely fashion. A huge part of what we strive to do is we want to add value and provide that beyond just the traditional audits. So I'm going to go briefly over some highlights and themes. Some themes, awareness, we continue to look for opportunities to reduce or eliminate gaps in controls, keeping a pulse on what's important. Over the past year, we've recently launched surveys that we send out after our audits where they can provide feedback, and it helps us recognize areas where we can improve in the department. We have collaboration with groups remains crucial because we definitely don't know everything, so we lean heavy on subject matter experts. Incident management system, I already kind of went over that a little bit, but our role is to triage and get those to the subject matter experts. Technology, ongoing discussions with stakeholders related to cybersecurity, GLBA, other areas where we can provide advisory services. Our senior IT auditor is leading the charge on a lot of those initiatives, which I'm truly grateful for. Resources, I've brought this up in the past, but cross-pollinating, so our Reno auditors help with Vegas audits. I truly appreciate the team's willingness to really help wherever they can. They've been great about that. And I also feel like we do a pretty good job about aligning skills. So like if there's a certain auditor working on a certain audit, gaining efficiencies by continuing having them working on those types of audits. On page 7, you'll see some charts and graphs tracking our open findings. This graph tracks the unresolved findings where it's 5 years. You'll see there is a slight uptick. I'm not trying to pick on the two highest columns, but I want to explain them. So a majority are from UNLV, but this is due to the fact we had quite a few audits open on them at the same time. It's a timing thing where their showing is open, but earlier at the meeting there was that follow-up report where some items can be closed out, but it's showing is open on the report. Also, the next one is the NGSA one includes some that are rather old, and they include policy and procedure updates. So I really do plan to try to get out ahead on that one this next round, because I really want to get those off the report. So formally tracking and monitoring these open exceptions is a useful metric. It helps identify from an internal audit perspective how many open issues we have, how many past due do we have, and general accountability and an indicator of management's buy-in and their willingness to accept our recommendations. And with that, that concludes my remarks for the work plan status report.
Thank you very much. This is for possible action. Are there any comments or questions on this agenda item from the committee? Seeing none, any comments or questions from the board that's here or online? Okay, seeing none, we will ask for a approval in regards to the work plan for the six-month period ending June 30th, 2026, and the internal audit department status report, six-month period ended December 31st, 2025. Is there a motion?
Motion, Regent Goycochea.
Thank you, sir.
Second, Regent Del Carlo.
We have motions from the north, Regent Goycochea and Regent Del Carlo. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Did wait for up north. Okay, thank you so much. We will go on to item number 8, that is information only. And that is internal audit compliance and or Title IX updates. And she, Chief Internal Audit, Lauren Tripp, will provide general remarks, which may include department updates, initiatives, alignment related to ongoing risk assessments or themes observed and or updates or incident management processes and metrics. No specific action is requested, but the committee may provide general feedback and direction. Ms. Tripp.
Thank you, Chair Breger. So this has just been a standing item to just provide some general updates. You got a Title IX update earlier. So I'll start this section with staffing in a theme of you win some and you lose some. So earlier this month, the Las Vegas senior internal auditor, she accepted a new opportunity as the UNLV senior compliance analyst. She's actually working for the former chief internal auditor. She's probably watching this right now, so I just want to take a moment to thank Daisy Cabanillas for her service in the department for almost 8 years. Conversely, we were also able to welcome Shannon Selich to the team as a deputy chief internal auditor. So in an effort to maximize efficiency, where we traditionally had two managers, one north, one south, this position not only serves as a super manager, but she can fill in my absence. And we're very excited to have Shannon as part of the team, and she actually comes to us from UNR. Another item that will be coming up later this year that we're focused on is our department quality assurance review. Think of this along the lines of who audits the auditors. These occur every 5 years. What this process entails is we perform a self-assessment and then an independent reviewer, they have to be a certified internal auditor, reviews our assessment. There's rankings given, like generally conforms, I'm missing, doesn't conform. There's four of them. It's essentially taking each of the items in the global standards and evaluating our conformance. So the organization we're a part of, ACUA, I already mentioned them a little bit earlier, there's a list of reviewers, so we're working on scheduling that towards the end of the year. It's definitely a process. And the last thing I kind of wanted to mention is in a couple of reports. So in the 2025 North American Pulse of Internal Audit Report, which has benchmarks for internal audit leaders, it discusses things like audit budgets, staffing, training technology. There's just a couple quick takeaways. There was an emphasis on building stronger strategic relationships, focus more on advisory services, working more closely with risk management. Emphasis on technology is the path of the future. I think there's not a week that goes by I don't get an email about a webinar related to AI. Another report that is rather interesting that the IA put out a little while ago is Vision 2035. So this explores where they think internal audit is projecting over the next 10 years. And in order to stay relevant, like what do internal auditors need to change to stay relevant? Bouncing back real quick to that Pulse report, the three areas with the highest risk levels from the audit survey were cybersecurity, IT, and compliance regulatory. So our team is actively implementing the new IIA cybersecurity topical requirements. So these topical requirements are high-risk areas, audit areas that have been identified by the IIA that they send out this separate document. It's to help provide consistency and quality audits. To operationalize this requirement, we're first embedding cybersecurity as a distinct risk category. I kind of mentioned this a little bit during the work plan. Just right now, that there's these different risks that we evaluate. So cybersecurity, we're going to have to add that per these standards. It has to be systematically evaluated, basically, each engagement. And lastly is, there was a presentation earlier, obviously, on cybersecurity, so we do know that this is a hot topic right now. In addition, we are just getting started on a project where we're assessing cybersecurity governance structures, risk management practices, and control environments at each institution, where if there's gaps identified, we hope to provide advisory services and guidance to assist leadership on achieving compliance and strengthen cybersecurity maturity, and we plan to have also additional discussions with SCS on that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And just quickly, and just mentioning AI, I had the fortunate, amazing hour, I could have stayed longer, with our total ENCHI, every campus was on their AI committee meeting that they get together. They do training for teachers. I learned so much on, teach, don't police, and other things that they were able to do with AI. I would recommend anyone, if they were to anybody, just sit in on the meeting. I believe they meet monthly, but they were all helpful, but in particular, I have to say CSN, the two ladies that are on there, just were so helpful. I had to speak somewhere, and I'm like, AI, me? What am I? So I did get to go to their meeting, and I thought I took pages for the audit committee. The notes that I took for that was insurmountable of what you could learn and what they do and how protected not only the students but the campuses and all of us. So it's really extraordinary. We have a dynamic team out there that is doing an amazing job. So I just would like to say that. On to this item number 8. It is information only, but are there any questions from any of the committee members? No, I don't think so. Any other regents? Seeing none, this was information only, and we will go on to public comments. Is there any comment at GBC?
Oh, you want to do a new business, Chair Brager?
No, I thought I'd skip that. What's my deal today? You know what? I'm so conscientious, and so I apologize. Regent Boylan made me be late, and no, I'm making the next committee late, so that's what that is. No, I'm just kidding. So I'm sorry. I know better than that. New business. Is there any new business from the committee? We have to have some fun. Any new business from any board members? See, there wasn't any anyway. No, just kidding. Okay, public comment. GBC, is there any public comment?
I got you.
There's no public comment from GBC at the time.
Thank you so much. System office in Reno?
None from Reno.
Is there any in Las Vegas? Seeing nobody running up to the podium. Any on the telephone?
None at this time, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. We are going to go in adjournment when we were on our timeline. But yes, thank you all so much. And the audit really is amazing. The AI is amazing. And to Lauren Tripp and the auditors, thank you so much, because it's a big task. And to all.